We begin. Hello, friends. This is the beginning of a different series of webinars. It's called the Treatise on Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries, or maybe I should just call it CFWC, Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries. I remember Mary Bailey, she was quite a one for the particular name of the book. And if you said something like cosmic fire, she would say, a treatise on cosmic fire. Rays and the initiations, the rays and the initiations. Well, as you either know or will know, I have finished my commentaries on esoteric astrology. It's about 695 pages. Of course, cosmic fire is twice that long, just about twice that long. And there are, I suspect, over 300 programs, approximately 1 hour in length, some a little less because of truncation, some technical glitch that made it impossible for me to go on with that program, or sometimes just overenthusiasm going on a bit too long, 5 or 10 minutes too long over the hour. But my colleague Brett Mitchell is helping me with these, and these will be available to you shortly. Already about 121 of the, well, let's see, over 200 are available to you now. So I decided, since the last part of esoteric astrology is such a demanding exercise in thought and gathers so liberally from the secret doctrine and from a treatise on cosmic fire, that I had to think in those cosmic terms when trying to come to grips with thought which might be useful, trying to come to grips with the text. So I thought, well, okay, in 2005 I began a group called the Fellowship of Cosmic Fire, and at that time classes began in several places. California, Australia, Denmark, and I'm trying to think, did I do a little teaching along that line in New Zealand? It might have been. And also I worked in two places in California. And while I was doing that work, I began to make commentaries on A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. This is no easy task, and it took some 5 years before I reached page 1,194. And all of these commentaries, there are 9 semesters worth, and in each semester there's a commentary for every approximately every 2 weeks. All of these are on the Makara website, and you can access these if you really feel like some rigorous study. But I didn't finish the work. Many things came up. Mostly, I think, it was the Maurya Federation which came up, and the demands for preparing curricula, working with students, and in general starting a new venture. You know, we Aries people, we oftentimes start new ventures maybe before we finish old ones. So I left about 100 pages. And of course, the 100 pages that remains contain some of the most profound and also difficult material. Meanwhile, during the cosmic fire work in Denmark, I did a section on the stanzas of Zian. And so there is one complete week dedicated to discussing these stanzas in group formation, and I will make those available to you. Probably what I'm going to do also is repeat a little bit of that work. In the book that was just completed, of course, when I use a word like completed, I kind of cringe because, you know, when you're dealing with esoteric astrology and the Tibetan's material, nothing is ever completed. But my effort to bring something into focus took me all the way through that book, page by page. And as you all know, around page 34 and 35 is a section on the creative hierarchies. And so there are some, quite a few programs on the creative hierarchies. As a matter of fact, if I went to Makara right now, and you all know this website that Victoria Stone has prepared, it's really a marvelous website, and it's a great service to those who are serious about their study of the ageless wisdom. So these are the commentaries on esoteric astrology here. My internet, I think, is not doing all the best it might at the moment. But going all the way down to the bottom, as it were, you see the different esoteric astrology adventures listed. And somewhere here, right around page 34, so esoteric astrology adventure number 14. Then we have 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. So from about 14, esoteric astrology adventure number 14 to 24 is all on the creative hierarchies, because there's this section of the book in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire was imported directly, word for word, into esoteric astrology, because there's so much astrological information. The map, the charts, the tabulation was gathered, I suppose, by students under the Tibetan's direction. And he says that it contains as much as is possible now, and very little has been given out on the question of the creative hierarchies. So it contains as much information as one can really talk about in relation to the creative hierarchies. Well, I compared these sections in Cosmic Fire and Esoteric Astrology, and they are pretty much word for word, but the context in which they are found in Cosmic Fire is different. The Tibetan throws in a few extra things in the Esoteric Astrology book that was written later, and there are some things that he does not touch upon in the book A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So I thought, well, I don't know if I'm foolish or not, but I thought I would go over that material now again conversationally in the Cosmic Fire context. Basically, what I'm doing here is I'm finishing the Cosmic Fire book. I said to one of my friends, I better finish it before it finishes me. And so approximately 100 pages remain, and I'm going to attempt to talk about them verbally in this way, and showing the text as I tend to do in classes. But now, you know, there are fewer classes, and perhaps that's good because it allows me to really concentrate on this material in ways which I perhaps could not in the classes themselves, because in the classes, you know, you have to be, of course, attentive to the student body and to their questions, and you have to be evocative if you can, and pause for questions, and solicit responses, and follow up other questions. Of course, all of that is to the good, but it doesn't allow you to keep this rigorous focus on the material. Of course, I know I provide plenty of tangents here. I'm aware of that. Yes, I would like very much. It tells me my audio connection is lost, but hopefully I'm still talking to myself at least. Yes, apparently so. And this will, at least if I talk to myself, it will allow me to talk to you. Okay. Now, I guess I'm getting some kind of echo here, and I would like that to disappear. I should have known better than to start with a Mercury square Saturn. One of the things I want to do, of course, is to show you the astrological chart. I mean, working in the last part of Cosmic Fire may not take a long time, but it will be very exacting work. Also, what I intend to do is there are stanzas at the end of Cosmic Fire which are of profound difficulty and elevation, and they concern the seven cosmic paths. What I would like to do is study those stanzas when due time comes, and also incorporate the material from the rays and the initiations which he gave later on the cosmic paths. There's also some preliminary material, but I think it has been repeated later, in Initiation Human and Solar. It seems like the time to do that, because I never really had a chance to do that in the classes. Also, there are opening stanzas of Xian, of which there are 13 in the Cosmic Fire book. And what I intend to do is to go over them, and I have notes from the classes and so forth, and try to go still more deeply. In a way, I'm not expecting this work to go rapidly. I'm expecting it to be thorough, and I'm well aware that I'm in a section of the book where only initiates of very high degree will really understand what is transpiring. We're dealing with stanzas that have to do with those who are taking the way of higher evolution, which at this time begins at the sixth degree. And the symbolism is appropriate to their level of understanding. So why bother at all? Well, the Tibetan gave us this material, and he must be thinking that somehow it will inspire us with a vision of the possibilities that lie ahead of the human, strictly human, process. The various religions promise us all a rather fatuous heaven or paradise, where activities are pursued much as they are here on Earth, on this lowest level. It kind of reflects an impoverished imagination. But the ageless wisdom offers possibilities beyond the highest or even wildest dreams of the human being, and other, yes, possibilities about which we can have no accurate imagination whatsoever. But perhaps as we go through these destined possibilities, and actually they will be more than possibilities, they will be actualities, once we reach that point, we will seed into our lives a certain germinating power that will help us conceive of our destiny as a reality, and will influence right here and now, how we will be conducting our lives. It all, you know, it all has to work out practically. If we're just studying this material to somehow escape from our responsibilities, you know, there's always that danger, or to clog the mind with knowing inapplicable truths, we will do ourselves no service and no one else any service either. But if the quality of our vision can be changed, the quality of the hidden vision, as it is called, the second method of inducing soul control, if that vision is changed, and if our will to move towards that vision is increased, and if as a result of that movement, revelation dawns, increasing revelation, then it will have been worth it. D.K. wrote this, and it will be substance for discussion and meditation in the new esoteric schools, which are coming in the Aquarian age. And we have to, what will you say, get a head start here. We're in training for the preparatory schools, which will appear, the seven of them, and later for the advanced schools. And this may take hundreds of years before these materialize in any degree of fullness and are really supervised by the masters of the wisdom. It will be during the time when the Christ is present, visibly on our plane. So the wonder of the new age, of the Aquarian age, is just about inconceivable to us at this time of great turmoil. But as I read a book long ago, or at least in the Arcane School we were advised to read it, and of course I forget the title, but the author, Pitrim Sorokin, it had to do with culture and civilization. And one of the things that really struck me was the idea that even as the old civilization is decaying and crumbling and going into pralaya and all of its institutions are breaking down, that in the very midst of that, the seeds of the new are germinating, perhaps because of the soil provided by the decay of the old. Well, we people who are interested in esotericism, we find ourselves pretty much in that position now. There is a withering of the law going on all sides, and an uprising of lawlessness on all sides. And we look forward to the manifestation of the Bodhisattva, who manifests himself from age to age for the, how is it said, the strengthening or the salvation of those who do good, and the destruction of such as do evil. And for that reason he manifests himself from age to age. This we witness around us now. People have no real spiritual anchor. The old solutions offered by religion, except by the most fundamentalist kind, fails to attract anymore people of reason. And those who are attracted by the fundamentalist religions are generally people of emotion and intense idealism, who are on their way out, as it were. Their soul cycle is coming to an end with the close of the Piscean Age, the energy of which will have waned entirely by the end of the 21st century, and the energy of the sixth ray by the first fourth or so of the 22nd century. So there are no real spiritual anchors. The world is flooded by the possibilities of learning these new spiritual methods, and there is an avant-garde of people who really do believe in these things and are living the life accordingly, but it has to spread much more widely than it is now. And we are part of the, DK calls it, a second ray spiritual propaganda effort, you know, the propagating of these ideas, the propagating of this vision, which will spread far more deeply into society and make it possible for spiritual occultism to win the day by the end of the 21st century, as HPB says that it must do. So all of these programs, this discussion of things that are way over my head and over your head and over the head of every human being except the high initiates, you know, it's all meant for that purpose, to inspire humanity in such a way that it's willing to reorient, reverse the wheel, you might say, change its values, stop in its mad pursuit of materialistic objectives, and realize the relative worthlessness of such things and the great importance of the kingdom of heaven that is within, as the Christ told us. You know, this is really one day after I completed the Esoteric Astrology book, and I went through some kind of postpartum depression for about a few hours, and I thought, well, what now? Because there are many things that I want to do. You know, I want to offer programs on the Egoic Lotus, on the old commentary, on the last part of Rays and the Initiations, also on physiognomy. Those are some of the things that I want to do, and this. And I thought, maybe I'm getting warmed up to do this. It's such a daunting task. Because, and you'll see why, you know. There will be some things we read that just will be leaving us in silence. What more can we do? We can offer a few pitiful suggestions, but any attempt to use the abstract mind and the intuition to fathom these exalted transcendental teachings will be a step in the direction of later understanding. We will come to understand. There's no question about that. But we have to begin somewhere, and was it Lao Tse and maybe many others who said the journey of 10,000 miles begins with but a single step? So we don't want A Treatise on Cosmic Fire to be one of those books that we have and which stays on our bookshelf high above until maybe it falls off and hits us in the head one day and says, read me. You know how it is with these great big tomes, Cosmic Fire and The Secret Doctrine and Isis Unveiled. They are door openers, you know, and they keep doors open, too. You can use them as good doorstops, you know. They're very heavy. And so often people say, oh, yeah, I have that book. But, you know, the courage to make the penetration into the often obscure writing of HPB, who had quite a command of English, of course, but she wrote about things that require a vast perspective and historical knowledge of a type that doesn't really exist among the average historians. She's writing a planetary history. She's writing of a perspective of some 21 million years and going back into ancient civilizations, ancient races and root races and sub-races. She's going back into a time that modern human beings consider to be mythological and therefore not real, legendary. But as Master Moria tells us, every legend is in fact true, if it's a legend. So, you know, what is the truth of these ancient myths that seem stranger than fiction now? We have to recapture our history so that we can get a perspective, and we're not, you know, I sometimes use the impressions just like little water bugs on the ocean, sustained by surface tension. No depth at all. But maybe we will acquire the depth of soul that should be the birthright of all of us once we reach a certain level of penetrating mind and interest, and no longer skitter on the surface, just held up by the surface tension of the water. So with these great books, which so many people think are difficult to penetrate and maybe not worth the effort, there are many more immediate gratifications available in our society of instant gratification. But that's just the desire body out of control, and the great path to revelation and to enlightenment and to liberation is the real thing. And it's this that we have to pursue, even though it means late hours, reduced sleep, disappointing one's friends, self-discipline in many ways, frustration, hanging pendant between the pairs of opposites, dissatisfied with what has gone before, not able to reach what lies ahead. Those things are part of the path. And the path is so eminently worthwhile that we just have to accept the difficulties that are inevitable if we want to tread the way towards liberation, and in doing so, take others with us and assist others on their way. The hands we know reach in two directions, above and below. The magician holds above and helps below. I look above, I help below. I dream not, nor I rest. I seek the way, I yearn to know. Visions I see and fleeting deep impressions. Behind the portal on the other side lies that which I call home. For the circle has been well nigh trod, and the end approaches the beginning. I seek the way. Always my feet have trod. The way of fire calls to me with fierce appeal. Naught in me seeks the way of peace. Naught in me yearns for rest. Let the fire rage, the flames devour. Let all the dross be burnt. And let me enter through that gate and tread the way of fire. See, this mantram of fire, this is a mantram of aspiration. This is a mantram of those who are really committed to the path and are willing to undergo many hardships, often of a subtle kind, in order to tread that path. The use of mantrams is wise. There are some wonderful mantrams given to us by the Tibetan. And they encourage us and they reaffirm all that is best in us. And the old habit of memorizing valuable things, valuable poems, paragraphs, phrases, sentences, is a good one because it helps you learn by heart and ingest or incorporate into your life those great ideas presented in an inspiring way. here from the very beginning, from Initiation Human and Solar, another one of those great mantras which should express our attitude as we undertake challenging tasks on behalf of the great light and the great love and the power descending. I play my part with stern resolve, with earnest aspiration. I look above, I help below. I dream not, nor I rest. I toil, I serve, I reap, I pray. I am the cross, I am the way. Sometimes it says I mount the cross, but this is more correct. I am the cross, I am the way. I tread upon the work I do, I mount upon my slain self. I kill desire and I strive for getting all reward. I forego peace, I forfeit rest, and in the stress of pain, I lose myself and find myself and enter into peace. What a great mantra which begins the work in the Arcane School. And, you know, you have to have a lot of fire to follow this. I play my part with, you know, it's kind of a sixth-ray, first-ray attitude in a way. I play my part with stern resolve, with earnest aspiration. Aspiration, a scientific method of achievement. The rising fire, to be followed by the fire of Kundalini. I look above, of course. I study all the great things. I help below. I help those who are immediately there to be helped, who come into my sphere. I dream not. I don't get lost in vain imaginings of the astral plane. And I don't rest. Master Moria said, rest is a change of labor. How's that, huh? He says all he can do is promise us eternal labor. But if rest is a change of labor, then there's incredible mobility there. I toil. I serve. I reap my karma. I pray. There's nothing wrong with prayer. If the Christ could pray, we can pray. I am the cross. I am the material cross being transformed into soul and into spirit. I am the way. I am the Antikarana, leading to the monad which I am. I tread upon the work I do. It's always insignificant. I don't hold it up and make a big deal out of it. It is something useful. But I don't get attached to it. I mount upon my slain self. I don't give in to egoism. I don't identify with that which is the instrument. I kill desire, especially lower desire, and I strive, focusing the rising fire, forgetting all reward, putting aside the possibility that at any one point we will receive that which we are looking for, because what we are looking for is ourself, the true self, the true being. I forego peace, or, you know, the untroubled tranquility of the astral body, which so many people yearn for. It's a lower type of peace. It's not shambolic peace. I forfeit rest. It goes without saying. I'm remembering Master K.H. saying, I've been awake for 48 hours now. He says, meditation is our holiday. The Buddha, I think, stayed up for 48 hours in order to achieve his enlightenment. And in the stress of pain, which is inevitable on our planet, I lose myself, my lower self, and find my self, my true self, and enter into a higher peace, the shambolic peace, the true peace of the will of God. Marvelous mantra. Now, the chart on which I began all this, well, as I said, you know, it has some tough squares. The square of Saturn to Mercury is a hard one, and it shows an exacting type of process, one that will always be tested and challenged, I think, as often by myself as by anybody else. The Sun is in Leo, and we're in this marvelous period between the first Leo Sirius full moon and the second Leo Sirius full moon, the blue moon. So it gives a tremendous opportunity to participate in and receive this affirmation of being, of love, wisdom, of true Identity of the True Illumination of Initiation. The asteroid series is there. The nurturing of the true self, Investa, is there for commitment, the keeping alive of the sacred flame. Sometimes the Sabian symbols are interesting. In this particular case, goodness me, no, that's not the right one. We have to go back a little bit. I think it was almost Blavatsky's degree about that daring bareback rider, but this is a chemist conducts an experiment before his students. Well, if I'm the chemist in this particular case, I'm conducting the experiment to see if anything worthwhile can be said about these final pages in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire. The moon is in Virgo. It's its esoteric position, and it's conjunct Venus, which is falling in Virgo. The degree is, I think, quite favorable. Something to this effect. A blazing, no. I don't know why this is off, but it happens, you know. A royal coat of arms, and if we can gather to ourselves any of the great nobility of hierarchy, this will serve. You know, the moon represents so many things that we have to leave behind, but in Virgo it also veils the spiritual will of Vulcan and the birthing of the Christ consciousness with veiled Neptune. So there is a deeply transformative process going on all the time with the esoteric moon in Virgo, and Venus, the planet of love and light and of the solar angels and of the great transmutation from the fourth kingdom to the fifth, is exactly conjunct. And it's in the sign of its fall, but that fall is like an exaltation. It means deep service. The soul descends deeply into matter, and the chance of elevating the strictly concrete mind and the materialistic perspective into the nurturance of the Christ principle is very, very strong. So this is quite a favorable conjunction for this, and it brings not just meticulousness, which I suppose we will experience a bit of, but it brings that all into the light of the soul, and there is a favorable, harmonious aspect to the midheaven, which is the purpose of it all. Pluto we find in the ninth house, and may it help to kill off some of the remaining illusions that we have, and certainly we will have plenty. You know, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows, come forth into the light of day. Display the hidden glory of the Blessed One, the glory of the one and only. So we hope, at least I hope, that some of what is in the soul as wisdom will come through as the fifth house rules the causal body. I'm in a fairly northern latitude up here in Finland, and as a result, there's some distortion in the houses. Jupiter is in Cancer. It's a secondary planet. It's in the third house and should help with the synthesizing of the information which is forthcoming. Let's see. I don't know. Sometimes it just works perfectly, and other times you just have to go hunting. And this, a large diamond, not completely cut. Well, exactly. What else could it be? I mean, every one of our efforts is trying to tackle a diamond of great price, and we ourselves are diamonds in the rough. But we have not used the precision of mind and intuition to make that diamond shine with a great radiance and turn us into what we will become, the diamond soul. So we are imperfect, we are imperfectly cut, but at least we will be gathering a greater view, a tremendously great view of cosmos, with these seven or nine paths, most of them, almost all of them, out of the solar system altogether and towards great starry systems. So we can use our memory, we can use our retention, we can gather into one wholeness of integrated thought, the many items of knowledge which may come to us in this kind of study. And it is a study. It's a bit like a study group. It's a bit like sitting down together and talking about things, but in this particular case, I know I'm talking to myself, but then we're all one self anyway, you know, so I'm talking to you with the best thoughts that I can come up with at a particular time. I don't really plan this ahead of time. I have to trust that over these years, you know, some 50 years in theosophy, just about exactly 50 years in theosophy and in the ageless wisdom one way or another. I met my teacher exactly 50 years ago, now in a few months, and got properly reoriented and began to sense the vastness of the process and have been at it ever since. So I'm just trusting my own ability after all these years to put together and synthesize some thoughts. I would like to be able to pre-plan everything I say in a very exacting manner, but there is no time for that anymore. And I've done that to a degree with the commentaries on the rays and the initiations on the 14 rules. That extensive work is available to you on Makara. And as I say, on the first 1,194 pages of a treatise on cosmic fire, that's available to you. All of that is quite exacting. It took a long time. It took many, many, many hours, and of course so will this, but, you know, of the most exacting kind of thought. Now I will have to rely upon what may have been learned in this long process. The Gemini is rising. We're in the Libra degree of Libra, decanate of Gemini. We're in the decanate of the little dog. It's Procyon. And there is a great anticipation. It's sort of the John the Baptist decanate compared to the Christ decanate of Sirius, which comes later. This decanate is ruled by, is it Mars? It's either Mars, it's got to be Mars, Jupiter, Mars, Sun. So there's a great eagerness and anticipation, getting into things, that maybe getting ahead of oneself. It's ruling the Ajna Center, and it's the forerunner of the Christ, and that's what we're all doing. We're all forerunning. We're in our own way. We're trying to prepare the way for the great Lord and all that he may bring, and we haven't the slightest idea of the depth of what he will bring, but okay, that's what we're doing. So Gemini, the spread of information, and the star Aldebaran is right on the ascendant, quite close. I think I could say it's on the ascendant. Let me just check that for you and for me. And the reports are there, and let's see, star aspects. Solar Fire, we owe a great debt to Graham Dawson, the originator of Solar Fire, and to Stephanie and all the people who have continued that tradition. I think, you know, the best astrology program out there, especially for esoterically inclined people. And, I think we're... This is the wrong one. Should be this, you know. I don't know why. Star aspects. 10 degrees. And let's see if we can find it. Anyway, it's very close. It's within about a degree. And I almost might... This says it's an event chart. And that's not what we want. We want something else. Let's see if this does any better. If not, I'll just let it be, and you'll just have to... Yes, here it is. Aldebaran is right there, right on the ascendant. It says, success through integrity. Well, let us hope that we all have that, some degree of integrity in these studies, and Rigel is on the vertex, which we cannot escape, and it says to bring knowledge to others. We have quite a tough aspect here. It's Pluto conjunct the star nebula Phases, ruthlessness or the victim. Well, let's hope we can be ruthless in our dispelling of illusion. And there's a conjunction here of Neptune, the sixth-ray planet, in a way, with Fomalo, another sixth-ray star, success through noble ideals. And Jupiter, which I may have pointed out, is conjunct Alhena, to have a mission. So you can freeze this if you like, you know, when you're looking at it and take a look at some of these star positions. I think the Jupiter degree, yes, the large diamond, uncut, and we do have the mission of making that diamond ever more beautiful, sparkling, radiant, until we can all become the diamond soul. I'm trying to get our way back here to the okay. So, anything further on that? There are some strong parallels here as well. And I think I like this degree here of Juno, planet of partnership and union. You know, maybe we'll get into discussions again about these things. This is the a man tête-à-tête with his inspiration. May we all be that. May we somehow contact our inspiration as we consider these high things. And there is a strong Uranus trine to the Sun and to Ceres and also to Vesta. So this gives us the possibility of sudden illumination and the possibility of seeing the archetype. I'm interpreting these things in esoteric manner, right? With Mercury in Leo, it's an important planet for Gemini, and it means that we come to... okay, that's the 18th degree. And I'm going to go back here to Mercury. And... well, we're up to date. You know, in those old days, 100 years ago, when these symbols were derived, it says a woman having her hair bobbed. Well, you know, everything has become much more risque now. But it means daring to break with tradition, and I think that our very strong Uranian is there. Many thoughts that are not of a traditional nature will be emerging here, and they will be thoughts that are emerging from our own inner self that Leo can represent. We're going to consult what the astral body, not the astral body, well, maybe sometimes it'll be that too, who knows, but what the causal body has to say about all this and what our own gifts may be in terms of wisdom and understanding. So, you know, there may have to be some flexibility here. I like it when I can day after day work on these things. But it's not always possible, you know. There's the University of the Seven Rays and the Moria Federation and trips to the United States and many other things that occur. So maybe with a degree of flexibility, it will be possible to work our way through these last 100 pages, which some of which are really beyond, and then also go back to the earlier stanzas of Zian. So we probably have 120-something pages to deal with. And we have temerity to do it, but at least it gets us thinking in these terms, and some of us would normally never think in these terms. We would tend not to bother with these very impractical, so we think, and remote issues. But now we will. And whether it's an act of foolhardiness, I'm trying to get my courage up here a little bit. Maybe there was no accident that I stopped where I stopped. I remember there was a place right before on 1194, and I thought it was an amazing discussion. This is one way to get to, here it is. And he was talking about the different abilities of different monadic types, a kind of triple avatar, only makes his appearance under peculiar series of cycles concerned with a group of monads who were most progressed and advanced at the opening of the Mahamanvantara. And yet, you know, at the opening of the Mahamanvantara, that tells us the Buddha was, we'll see here, they had progressed, and this is a hint about the Buddha's association with the previous solar system, as there are not many progressed enough to do this triple work. As yet, there are not many progressed enough to do this triple work. The Buddha and nine others are the only ones yet remaining in touch with our particular planet in this particular manner. There's mysteries concerning the Buddha, very definitely. And as the seeds of the previous solar system ripened in him, so we get the hint that indeed he was very advanced at the opening of the Mahamanvantara, which is our solar system. So there's no question about it. He, at least in my view, unless the word Mahamanvantara is used, being used in a lesser way, the Buddha comes from the previous solar system. And so those are the third ray monads making a triple appearance. A few are as the Christ is and have the power to make a dual appearance. This type of monad is only found on rays 2, 4, and 6 on the soft line. And whatever ray 1 may be able to do, we don't know. But that's basically where I left off my commentary. And that was a couple three years ago, something like that. And I thought, will I ever go any further? But now somehow something rests upon me, some Vulcanian pressure, you know, the hammer from above, and says, do this. And so I will do my best. And we will begin right here from 1194. You can see the kind of material that we'll be into. It's quite astonishing in its depth. We can even, you know, a little bit, we can begin. I'm going to, I won't call it repeat, because nothing is ever a repetition, but I'm going to go over certain things about the creative hierarchies. And some of this will be in the esoteric astrology commentaries, and I said from just about from program number 24, about 10 programs on the creative hierarchies. So probably what I'll do is take a more abbreviated approach, and hopefully one that has maybe even a higher and more synthetic perspective. It may yet be possible. It says here that if the student bears in mind that the nature of form is dependent upon the quality of the incarnating life, and that is something not easy to accept. And people think that somehow the inner life is induced by the brain, and its quality is dependent on the physical mechanism. It's exactly the reverse. So the higher the inner life, the more sensitive and responsive the form. That the nature of the form is dependent upon the quality of the incarnating life. You will also have to bear in mind the distinctions between the various groups of hierarchies. Hierarchies are these, you know, you try to think of it in simple terms if you can. They are these groups of lives, collections of points of being. How can I put it? You know, something like that. Collections of points of being. That's what we are. We're a point of being consciousness. We're apparently a point, and yet we are, there's only one point in all of cosmos. And we are all that point. In the great point, there are all the points that can possibly be, and yet they're all only one point. So we will have to take into consideration the distinctions between the various groups of hierarchies, all with their different internal power, consciousness, and therefore having different forms through which they express In other words, here we go, that the different hierarchies will have different forms through which they express, all the way from the tiny atom, and even, I suppose, subatomic particle, all the way up to great deities, because we cannot imagine that the hierarchies somehow discontinue after we reach our position on the higher astral plane, on the cosmic astral plane. See, here are these hierarchies with which we are familiar, and the highest one is the name is unknown, and its ray is third ray, the ray of substance, and its energy is that of intelligent substance. So from it, on the cosmic astral plane, the intelligence of all substance, even the tiny elemental lives, is emanating from that high place. But we cannot imagine that the hierarchy ceased there. I had a good friend once here in Finland. His name was Raimo Kelaharju. I've lost touch with him. He's quite an elderly man, if he's still alive, and he wrote a book called The Revolution of Reality, two books about reality. And in these books he has a theory in which the hierarchies simply continue on the various subdivisions of the cosmic planes. Our systemic planes are subdivisions of the cosmic physical plane, and here we will have subdivisions of the cosmic astral, and he simply continues the hierarchies going all the way up to the top of this kind of setup right here. There we go. See, and here's our cosmic physical plane, but the hierarchies continue on and on and on and on. Each one of these planes is just as big as the cosmic physical plane, with actually each one has 343 divisions. So just imagine what we're dealing with. It's a bit like 7 times 343, isn't it? I've used this number before, but in all the cosmic planes that we're given, we will have this many divisions, 2,401 divisions in the, well, let's see, the supercosmic physical etheric plane. That's what I think I could call it. This is the seven cosmic planes, but together they are one etheric physical supercosmic plane. So we have to think about these hierarchies, who are points of being, and maybe I should ask as well, consciousness, points of being consciousness, for the lives in those groups are of a quality diverse to each other, and the forms in which they manifest are equally distinct and diverse. And therefore, we have to distinguish, and he makes it quite a list here, the involutionary groups, the evolutionary groups, and of course, there's the great outpouring. You know, we've seen this map that exists in a treatise on cosmic fire. By the way, these diagrams, the colored ones, you know, they come from Keith Bailey and the Ancient Universal Mysteries, and he's done a great service in filling in a lot of detail, and also the colors, which are so indicative. So we're grateful to him for that service and for the use of these diagrams. Take a look. This is the involutionary life and the evolutionary life. It's an old theosophical chart. Comes from about 113 years ago. Charts are wonderful for the mind, you know. And DK told us that we would be learning a lot with the eye, instead of just with the ear. You know, being on myself quite a third-rate type in many ways, I like to learn with the ear, I like to learn things by heart and so forth, but there's no question that the eye allows you to synthesize and see everything at the same time. So the involutionary groups, the evolutionary groups, as it is said, the seven groups of lives, which we call the lunar fathers, and another name here is lunar petries, which means ancestors or fathers. We have... And I suppose they do really come from the moon chain, you know. They are, let's say, lives from the moon chain, which were abstracted into our chain, as was their leader, I believe, the chain, Lord, of the moon chain. So there are the three corporeal groups of essences, who are the elemental kingdoms, and four material, who are on the upward arc. They are the forms of the four kingdoms on the upward arc, the forms. So actually, this is an interesting thing. There are seven types of lunar lives. And it's a kind of a evolution all unto itself, all unto its own. And it is destined to become man. Those lunar lords who are occupying the vehicles of the animal, for instance, can find themselves on the path to the animal kingdom and thereby on the path to individualization. Then there are the seven hierarchies of lives, and these are called the manifest hierarchies or creative hierarchies. Oh, come on. Creative hierarchies, there we go. And the diagram for them is precisely the one we've been looking at here as we opened. These are the manifested creative hierarchies, and they're manifested on the cosmic physical plane. But if you go back, you find a group that is manifested on the cosmic astral plane, except for the very lowest one, which is about ready to transit into the cosmic astral plane, but is still found upon the highest level of the cosmic physical plane. And then there are the seven groups of solar angels. And I assume they are distinct according to Ray. And we've gone through the names of these beings all through my written commentaries on Cosmic Fire, I've mentioned them, and also during the Esoteric Astrology commentaries. So, all right, then that's going to be it. I've started, all right, and I think, you know, it's important to me one day after finishing the Esoteric Astrology, at least to start, you know, it may be days before I can carry anything further, but at least a start has been made. So this is the end of Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries. Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries 1. And we're on page 1194. And next time we'll be beginning Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries 2. Page 1194. So I breathe a deep sigh of relief here. I've been fretting a little bit, wondering, you know, could I really begin this thing today? And turns out that it has happened. Even though the bit of an introduction setting the stage, you know, but at least getting into some of the material, magnificent material, all I'm asking you to do is just think along with me. I'll do my best to clothe ideas in as proper a form as I can possibly find, and ideas will come to you, and in many cases better ideas than have come to me, and it will prove a stimulation for us. That's what I trust, and that's what I hope. Okay, friends, we'll see you when we see you, and either tomorrow, the next day, or the next week. We will see. But welcome to Treatise on Cosmic Fire, webinar commentaries in the last 100 pages of the book, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and also the stanzas of Zian later that are found more towards the beginning of the book. And we'll see you later.